Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, that was the theme song from the Jetsons, that cartoon, and I'm going to suggest that people, if you haven't watched the Jetsons ever or haven't watched the Jetsons cartoon in a while, check it out again or check it out for the first time, because that cartoon, in my opinion, it's telling you of coming attractions, future coming attractions. Now, how did I even come up with this? Well, this morning, around, I don't know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, having a conversation with a high school friend, And he brought up a topic, I guess because we were talking about people that had passed away and that, you know, you have grandparents out here, and in some cases, great-grandparents that are outliving not only their children, but their grandchildren, and in some cases, even great-grandchildren. What's going on here? So we looked at, well, on the surface, you know, somebody that might be older than a generation, a baby boomer generation, somebody in their 80s or what have you, or 90s, they grew up eating real food. Maybe they grew up on a farm, and they weren't, I mean, their grocery store to a high degree was their backyard or stuff that was grown in the community. Whereas now, you know, fast foods might not really be real food. You know, eating processed food, even the stuff that, because we were talking about, you know, stuff that can kill people. Now, we know if you smoke a cigarette long enough or tobacco products, in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, you can develop some type of cancer. You know, lung cancer, tongue cancer, you know. But there's a warning label on the package. And then he brought up, you know, plastics and microplastics, and we'll get into microplastics later in the week. But microplastics, there are things in the environment that the human body cannot break down. You just can't break it down. Microplastics are one of the things. So you think about when you go into the store, you know, they ask you, what do you want, paper or plastic? I'm going to start asking for paper or bringing my own bag. I'll just bring my own, you know, one or two or three, you know, bags with me, sacks with me, cloth sacks with me, and put my groceries in that. And I'm going to stop taking plastic. And then, you know, if I want to buy meat, like ground beef, steak, anything that, you know, because they got things prepackaged and plastic, you know, I might take a trip to a butcher shop or say, can this be wrapped in, you know, something that's biodegradable instead of plastic. So we were talking about microplastics, and then he brought up a term that I never heard before, but we see it every day, tire dust. So you have a lot of people out here, and this is Airbnb week. Part two. How does this tie into that? Because Airbnb has an off-the-grid section where I think people need to check out. But in any event, tire dust. So in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to discuss that. So get your pen and paper out. We're going to talk about tire dust because most of us are breathing that in. And some of the side effects of breathing that in over a long period of time, you know, stuff can, you know, asthma, maybe even dementia, Alzheimer's. I'm no doctor or scientist or anything like that, but I'm just saying we're breathing in tire dust, and the human body is not designed to break down rubber like
chicken wings for that money, even though they was no good. But you do get something for your money. But when you put your money in the church bucket, what do you get back? Hope and a future after you die. And my position on that, if I have to die to experience heaven, I don't need that religion. Mm. Anyone who tells me that I should be content with accepting hell on earth when the white man has his heaven here, and the Chinese man has his heaven here, and the Arab and East Indian has his heaven here, and they're even building their heaven in my ghetto, and you're telling me I got to die in order to experience what they are getting right now? That's a religion I don't need because that's a religion for servitude. And so we have to put the black church to task and ask them, what are you doing with our Jesus money? Let me tell you what they're doing with your Jesus money. Every black church in America has their money in a white bank. It is the white banks that are funding the regentrification ethnic cleansing movement. So all of us go to church. We put $3 million in the church coffers every Sunday. $3 million goes to a white bank every Sunday. And guess what they do on Monday? They take $3 million of black people's white Jesus money, and they give loans to white land developers and businesses and entrepreneurs to come into the ghetto where the church is located, buy up all the property, and force grandma out on the street homeless. Now, grandma been going to that church for 30 years. Grandma been giving that church $50 every Sunday. And lo and behold, grandma had to finally face the reality that it was your Jesus money that put your ass on the street.
A DJI drone's about to be banned in the USA. Not because of a safety thing or an FAA ruling, but because of a patent claim made through the International Trade Commission. It's not impossible. The International Trade Commission is part of the US government, which decides what can and can't be imported into the US according to regulations. And Autel Robotics, who are no strangers to suing DJI or being sued by DJI, have made a claim relating to patent number 9,260,184. And that has been upheld initially by a single judge of the ITC, and that claim gives DJI 60 days in which they have to post bond to carry on trading and importing their drones, after which they could, in theory, be a ban. So what could possibly be so important as to ban the sales of DJI's drones? And what drones are we talking about? Well, we're talking about the important ones here. We're talking about the Mavic Pro series, the Mavic 2 series, and the Mavic Air. And Autel have also asked that the Inspire and Phantom 4 be included in that list, although that's not necessarily happened yet. What is the patent about? Well, it's about the way you clip on and clip off the propellers. Actually, let's just have a look. Here's a Mavic I happen to have. I can push down and remove. And the patent specifically claims something about the way that the counter-rotating propellers are put on in a different way. Now, the thing about patents is they can be filed without actually being tested. I mean, that patent number is over 9 million, right? Now, not every one of those patents has gone through a rigorous testing procedure. They are filed, and nobody looks at them too seriously until a company makes a claim. In a dramatic press release, possibly a bit too pleased with itself, Autel Robotics USA's lawyers, Steptoe, sadly for our British viewers, not Steptoe and Son, have clearly pointed out with enthusiasm the 60-day limit and the strength and importance of their claim. But is it as significant as all that? Well, certainly we're looking at some of DJI's leading consumer drones, so DJI definitely don't want an import ban slapped on them. But what will DJI do now? Well, they can sit out the 60 days posting their bond. Bail. No, sorry, not a bail bond. But they do have to post a bond. And at the end of that, they can file an appeal. And while the appeal's filed, they can carry on importing. And the appeal can take some time. What will probably happen as part of the appeal is that the patent will actually get examined. You might think, when you send off a patent to the US Patent Office, that somebody has a good look and checks to see whether that thing can reasonably be a patent or not. But in practice, that's a lot of work. So instead, they just get filed, and then if anything tricky or contentious comes up, then the court will have a look. So we don't really know for sure yet where the patent number 9,260,184 is significant is considered a genuine invention by Autel. And that will take some time and is quite an expensive court process, so that's something that may then happen. Even if Autel get their way and claim that whatever it is they've invented about screwing on and off the propellers on contra-rotating propeller aircraft, then what normally happens in this sort of scenario, almost always, is that the company then agrees a price, DJI will pay a little bit of money. There was one case in living memory where the president, because theoretically what happens in the next 60 days is part of the president's office, can intervene, almost never does, but did do once to help Apple out in Apple versus Samsung. And we don't quite know whether the president will do anything this time. Certainly, he's not exactly in favor of China. So Autel Robotics USA's claim against evil Chinese drone company DJI might get somewhere. Of course, Autel is also a Shenzhen-based company, but that's another matter. In fact, another interesting thing about Autel and DJI's Shenzhen rivalry has been playing out in US courts for quite some time, since 2016, when DJI filed a claim about Autel's striking similarity to their Phantom. Following that, there have been a number of other cases, including the antitrust case, in which Autel suggested that DJI were selling their drones for less than it cost them to make. It turned out that the maths they'd used to work that out was a little bit questionable, but technically that would have been against the law in the US, antitrust, as trying to prevent other companies from starting up. Now, we all might have our own views on that. It certainly does seem like DJI are doing very well and holding a lot of a growing market. And is that because their products are genuinely better, or is it because they make it very hard for other companies to get started? DJI are not short of patents of their own, and they can certainly make patent actions and make life very difficult for small companies. Autel are relatively small, and they can definitely feel a bit upset, and I imagine they felt a bit aggrieved about having their almost identical to Phantom device taken to court in the first place. So this sort of thing rumbles on, and in practice it's very unlikely to have a serious effect. And the result of the antitrust case was that Autel's maths was a bit off, and DJI do make a profit on their drones, which isn't that much of a surprise to all of us who've paid the price for them. So, do you need to worry about buying a DJI drone right now? Are they suddenly going to be illegal to import them into the USA? Almost certainly not. It's in no one's interest for that to happen, except maybe Autel. But it seems likely that Autel will be much happier with an outcome where they go to the patent court, and if they're lucky, they get their patent upheld following DJI's appeal. And then they get to come up with a charge and agree a rate and basically get a little bit of money from DJI for every drone that has been sold that infringes the patent. The bad outcome for Autel is that they go to the higher court, spend a lot more money on lawyers, and still lose. I'll tell you what, though, I'd be genuinely interested to hear what you guys think about the case, if you've read anything about it, whether you think that it's even reasonable to have a patent on how you clip in and out propellers, and whether you think Autel ought to win, whether DJI are anti-competitive. I'd also be interested to know if this in any way puts you off buying a DJI drone. If it does, I reviewed alternatives as well recently, the PowerEgg X and the Anafi, for example. Please do comment. And I'd love it if you subscribed, if you don't already. There's a subscription button floating around somewhere. And, you know, I get a little notification on my phone every time I get a subscriber. I'm not a massive influencer, so those things make me happy and cheerful. So much appreciated if you do. Thanks very much.
Okay, so today, just a quick jump off topic before we go to the phones. Tire dust. And let's... the school run and get that hard tire dust is a major source of microplastics, and it's killing. Let's see if we can do a Wikipedia on this. Tire dust. All right, well, let's see. We got rubber pollution. All right, rubber pollution, similar to plastic pollution, occurs in various environments and originates from a variety of sources, ranging from food industry processing chain to tire wear. And tire dust comes from tire wear. Just imagine as you're walking down the street, jogging, riding in your car with the windows cracked, or even if it's coming through the air vents, you're breathing in tire dust. And the human body is not designed to break down microplastics, which are included within tire rubber, or better known as tire dust. Synthetic or natural rubber dust or fragments are now in the food, airborne as particulates and air pollution, hidden in the earth as in soil, and in waterways, lakes, and the sea. Causes the wear. The tire wear is a major source of rubber pollution, a concern that, unlike exhaust emissions, vehicle tire wear pollution is not regulated. Some devices are nonetheless being developed in an effort to reduce the amount of particulates coming from the tire and others and otherwise ending up in the atmosphere or your body. Although it is not immediately visible to the naked eye, the dust makes up a significant portion of road debris. Now, you can't see this stuff. So just my recommendation again. If at all possible, move to a rural area, the more remote as possible, and watch the cartoon, The Jetsons. That's where we're headed. In The Jetsons, they have flying cars. Flying cars exist now. If you go to, you'll go to YouTube and type in the YouTube search engine, flying cars, there'll be a number of videos that you can watch. You know, they're already experimenting or beta testing drones to deliver packages to your door. So people, that word is in everybody knows what a drone is. So we're going to see, you know, bit by bit, drones. Matter of fact, if you're thinking about going to college, you might want to study robotics or major in robotics. But the Jetsons, look how they live, and look at the car. They're driving flying cars now. The flying cars that exist right now in 2023, May 2023, they don't look like the Jetsons cars, but nonetheless, they're flying cars. So check out YouTube. Unless they come up with a substitute for making wheels out of something that isn't harmful to the body. But just like on cigarettes or tobacco products, they have a warning label on there. Really, that's what they should put on tires too. Tire dust. You're breathing it in. And like I say, your body, like I say, if, because like I was thinking, well, you got grandparents and great-grandparents. I had a next-door neighbor, D.C. She passed away about a month ago, but she was 103. I had an aunt that passed away about 4 years ago. She was 105. So what are these great-grandparents doing to outlive their children or great-grandchildren? So the common denominators that I see is, number one, the people who made it to the 100 club or even the 90 club the common denominators is they grew up not eating processed foods. They grew up not eating fast foods. And a lot of them grew up in, you know, rural areas where there was no cars, really, or not that many. I mean, I even took a look at the Amish and the Mennonite communities, and, you know, they had the horse and buggy type thing that they're doing, which, you know, you're not going to get away with that in Chicago, but their kids are now doing electric bikes, which doesn't give off tire dust. It gives off tire dust, but not in the toxic amounts as an automobile would do. So, on Airbnb, they do have an off-grid section, an off-the-grid section of housing, and typically all these are in, like, remote places for the most part, or rural areas, because you can be rural. There's rural, and then there's rural remote. So you can be rural, and you're 15, 20 away from a major city, or a city that's got everything, or a town that's got everything you need. It's just a 15 to 20-minute drive, and dramatically less tire dust. And I even visited a community over in Germany, Vauban. And within that, about 5,000 or 6,000 people live there. And no gasoline-powered cars are allowed on that. It's basically bikes, and you might see one or two electric vehicles go through there. But tire dust, pollution, practically zero in that place. But more on that in a later. Because, like I said, this is Airbnb Week Part 2. Okay, now, and that's one of the things we can set up as a model. And anyway, let me go. That's all I've got, but let me see what you guys have to say about anything. Yesterday being a Memorial, excuse me, the end of the Memorial Day weekend. And you got one more day of May in 2023, so let's enjoy every moment of it. Okay, let's go to the phone lines real quick. 773. Your mic is open.
Grand Rising, how are you?
Fine. How are you? Still on a road trip?
No. I'm back in Chicago. Came back in on Sunday. Yeah.
My
brother got married. Mm-hmm. So beautiful ceremony and dinner. It was really, really nice.
Okay. What part of Pennsylvania was that in?
Pittsburgh.
Oh, I've been there several times.
Okay. Yeah, it's really nice.
And
I didn't realize
it's cold
it was so
in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Spurs really not that big. It's not that big, but you can find inexpensive housing there, though.
Well, that's changing.
They do
certainly
have
That is changing. The demographics are changing. Because my brother said not too long ago, you could get houses for like $30,000-$40,000. So I don't know if we would call this gentrification. But at this point, no. The same houses that were going for $30,000-$40,000 are going for like $130,000-$140,000.
Oh, they started gentrifying Pittsburgh.
I did see some construction going on as well. And so the business areas that were once like you could say like middle class, upper class areas, they had, lost a lot of money, and now they're buying and redeveloping those areas again. I was able to see a lot of construction going on out there. Yeah, so,
okay.
Yeah. My nephew, my oldest nephew by my brother, is he said that he was looking for a place, and one unit wanted $1,700, and nothing was included. And this is in that same business district area. It said $1,700, nothing was included. No pool, no jacuzzi, no utilities were included. Most rents are about between, because what they would share with me, I guess the average rent for a 1 to 2 bedroom is between $1,000 and $1,500. Yeah, so you get a deal, you're getting a deal if you find something. Yeah, that's just to rent. Yeah, so yeah. So my nephew just got a promotion as well. Yeah. And my youngest nephew by my brother, he is actually a very all like first responders too. So that was interesting to learn, yeah. I hadn't seen him in years. So I told him, I said, I'm not afraid to fly anymore, so even though you guys could have flown to me, I don't necessarily want to fly to Chicago. However, you know, we could commute a little better. I did start the travel agency, and it's gonna be named Soul Sensational Travel.
Okay.
Soul Sensational Travel. I'm sorry. And then the intimate apparel business is Sensual Soul Central. Soul Sensational and Soul Central. So two different types of companies. So what's going on? I wasn't able to listen I'm vacuuming and stuff.
Well, yeah, open phone lines. Anything anybody want to talk about? Like I said, we start out with tire dust. Because tire dust is something that virtually invisible, but every time you see a car rolling down the street, it's kicking up tire dust off those tires. That's why tires were, you know, we're down, and we're breathing in that stuff. So
interesting.
If you're looking at people that have asthma, birth defects. Like I say, your body is not designed to break down microplastics, and tire dust contains microplastics.
Right.
So some of the safer places that you would want to live in would be in a rural area or what I would call a remote rural area. And with internet connections and stuff, you know, it's doable. You can still work. Or you can live, many rural towns are in striking distance, 15 to 20 minutes away, 30 minutes away from a major metropolitan area. So you wouldn't be, if you wanted to reconnect, you can still do that. But I think people you might not smoke, but if you live in a New York City or someplace like that, although New York City does have a pretty advanced public transportation system. But some areas don't have, you know, subways, buses that run 24/7, anything like that. So, but you might have, there are some communities now that are popping up that are no car communities. In other words, the playgrounds, the houses, you know, you have to park your car. In a garage that on the fringes of that community, but you can't drive around through the community. Nothing gas powered. So, and I'm looking at eventually. All right, right now you do have drones that exist, and you do have flying cars that exist. They're expensive. But they exist, we already have the electronics of Dick Tracy and the Jetsons. Because if you look at did you ever watch the Jetsons cartoon? Reba?
I did. Yeah.
Okay,
I remember this day.
So, you know, the way the phones that they have is, you know, we have that now. All right. The design might be different, but that exists right now. So
yeah.
I'm even thinking about housing. So like on Airbnb, they have, because the Jetsons is basically an off-the-grid world that George Jetson and his family lives in. So I just went online and looked up, you know, Jetson housing, and a lot of those buildings are built on stilts.
Okay.
And you can build on stilts today. So,
I saw some of those out
anyway.
There because it's mountainous out there in Pennsylvania too, in Pittsburgh, you know. So there are a lot of mountains.
Right,
so I
Allegheny.
I saw some houses. I saw some leaning, a lot of leaning houses too. That was weird.
Yeah,
the
Pittsburgh
houses that people were leaning.
I used to go to drive to Pittsburgh. That's like a 5-hour drive from D.C., 4 or 5-hour drive. And I haven't been up there in a while. I haven't been up in Pittsburgh in about 10 years. But, man, I used to buy a house in Pittsburgh for like $2,000. Sometimes less. But I don't know what it is now. Now if I were to do that area, I wouldn't do Pittsburgh proper. I would go out in the county in the rural areas of Allegheny County and buy. Which somebody that I took a video of his house. He has an underground. Well, most of his house is underground. So his house is insulated by probably, as a matter of fact, it's probably the most unique and chic house I've ever stepped inside. When I tried to find his house. And I'll post it up by tomorrow, sometime this afternoon, the videos of that. I went looking for his house, and I couldn't find it. So I went into, because it was a little village, and I asked, you know, do you know where so-and-so lives at? And, matter of fact, I need to call him to make sure he's still on the planet. So they said, oh, no, well, just, so they told me where to go, and I had driven past where they told me to go 5 or 6 times. So this time when I went back, I drove real slow, and then I saw a faint, it was like real faint driveway. But, you know, we're talking about grass and dirt, that type of stuff. So then I turned into that, and I drove. You know, I saw a hill there, and as the closer I got to this mound, this hill, I saw a door sticking out of the hill. So I parked my car and then knocked on this door, and then I opened, you know, went inside, and it was like this house was chic. It could have been for Better Homes and Garden. And he has no doors on the inside of his house, just that entry door to get in. Now, he's got a front door, and on the front door of the house, now the front door is made out of glass, and the house is facing south. So this is up in the Pittsburgh area, Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, and the sunshine heats up his house, and if it gets like in the earth, insulates his house. So I'll put the videos up because I took some videos up when I went to interview him. But that, man, that was about, that's going back 10, 11, 12 years ago. Last time I was there, I need to check up on him, see if he's still around. But
yeah, my brother's house that I was living in is located there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in it, yeah.
Yeah.
It was,
but
a lot,
Airbnb
was a lot
has.
Scary.
Yeah, there's like I said, the cost of living, at least the last time I was there, was like really inexpensive. So I, you know. But I haven't been in here in a decade. But I am looking at some of the Jetsons houses. So I'm looking at, this is a preview of coming attractions. Flying cars and drones are here. Everybody doesn't have one yet, but at one time nobody had a VCR, nobody had a smartphone. But
true.
Now anybody's got a smartphone. All right, so that's where the ball's going. Anyway, so what? Any announcements on your end?
So the Cash Now Entertainment event, this is an investors and business only event. It's going to be on June 23rd, next month, coming up soon, a couple of weeks. June 23rd, 2023, that's a Friday, June 23rd, at Grand Ballroom Chicago, 6351 South Cottage Grove. And interested persons will be registered, and there'll be goodie bags. You can also include your business card. It'll be an amazing networking event. We're going to be discussing land investment, and the details will be shared by the producer of this event himself. WF Doc is his stage name. His name is Winner Fubu. He actually is from Liberia, and we'll get him on. We'll see if I can get him on today too. We're supposed to be connecting this afternoon. So vendor space is available, and the tables are $50. So you'll cash out $ICYME or call 773-449-8839. Again, the number 773-449-8839. This investment, for those who are wise enough to at least check it out and look into this opportunity, I am aware that you'll be able to get with a successful investment and the closing on the investment to be a double or triple return on your investment based on the process that Doc is going. So it's going to be called Star City. That's what we're building, Stars City, like stars in the sky, Star City. And so give me a call if you have any questions. If you want to sponsor a table, your business can also sponsor a table. We'll be live streaming as well. Open bar for 1 hour. Call me at 773-449-8839. My name is Reba.
Okay. All right.
So you might want to sponsor a table as well, because we're going to be building too. We're not just investing in the land; we're going to be building. So, And the vendor table, the sponsored tables are like 500, 300 to 500, and then it's $75 a person, $50 a person. So it's actually a business investment. It's an investment seminar fundraiser. So it's
a
fundraiser style seminar,
yeah. Okay. Switching gears. Did you see the movie or the documentary of it, Cleopatra, on Netflix yet?
No, I do not have Netflix. I was telling my son, I have this smart TV that I actually don't use. It's been used, but they were using it to play games. I bought it as my bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I am moving around the house, still unpacking since I moved here in September, and I am going to figure out how to hook the TV up myself. Because at one point, I was my youngest son, and I don't know why he doesn't remember how we did it. And for me, I should remember how to do it, too. So we're going to figure it out, because I know I needed an HDMI cord, and we just hooked it up a couple of different ways. I did hook up the TV to my laptop and was using my iPhone. So Bluetooth, and I screened from the iPhone to the TV. It was just an interesting way to hook it up. But I do have, like, Roku and all of that on the TV. That's why I mentioned all that. So I do have all that. You said Netflix. I might be where I can watch it this evening, because I'm going to be doing some work at the Grand Ballroom, so... After we're done cleaning everything, I'll ask if I can watch the documentary in the hospitality room or something.
Okay. Let me see. Well, is anybody out there that has seen the film Cleopatra with the Netflix version? 619-768-2945. Let's get your opinion on that. I saw it. So there's been a, well, there's been several movies done about Cleopatra over the decades. So, but this one seems to be controversial. And I guess it depends on what point of view you're coming from on it, whatnot. Anyway, I'm trying to find my way back to the studio.
What's controversial about it because of the image of the queen?
Yeah, that seems to be the controversy. You know, there's a Western point of view. Well, there's an American African. there's a black point of view, and then there's an Asian point of view. So it all depends on what point of view that you're coming from. But I think in order to accurately break down who Cleopatra the Seventh was, Pianchi brought up something interesting yesterday, that Cleopatra was really the name Cleopatra, which is Greek, not Egyptian. The name itself, Cleopatra, that we're using in the English language,
it was a title,
was not a Greek name. I mean, excuse me. Cleopatra is a Greek name, all right, not an Egyptian name. So the name Cleopatra, which is Greek, and she had a Macedonian, which is a Greek blood, DNA bloodline, at least part of it was, because there's a mystery of this. We don't know who exactly her mother was, all right. So, but on her father's side, Greek, all right, so... She was born in Egypt. Now, from that we can say she was, she was born on the continent of Africa. Many can say she was African. But you can be white and be born in Africa. I mean, Elon Musk, born and raised in Africa. So Elon Musk with white skin, he's African. Okay. Now, we can also look at it genetically. All right. Now, depending on who you look at, the 1950s or 60s definition of genetics is there are three genetic species on a rate of genetic of races: Mongoloid, Caucasoid, and Negroid. And I think they've expanded it to, you know, the genetic races, genetic DNAs. I think that's expanded. But Cleopatra, the name itself, which is Greek, was a de facto title. So the Netflix movie, the one that Elizabeth Taylor was in and Claudette Colbert was in, which is all based on Cleopatra the Seventh. Cleopatra, the Greek name itself, was a title. Pianchi, he brought that up yesterday. It was a de facto title. Just like Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was not that Roman emperor's name. You know, Julius was his name, but Caesar, that is a title. All right. Just like with, you know, the newly crowned king of England, Prince Charles III.
The prince is a title.
So king is a title. Caesar is a title. Cleopatra is the factual title. And she was the seventh Cleopatra, just like Charles, King Charles, is the third Charles king that was named, that had at least the first name, Charles. Julius was a Caesar. He wasn't the first Caesar. He wasn't the last Caesar, but it was a Caesar, which that's there in those times and in that part of the world. Rome, which is a city in Italy. The Cleopatra that this is around. So we had to look at, although she was born in Africa, okay, and you look at the history of her bloodline, which was Greek, Macedonian Greek, all right, then we have to look at, well, how did, and they had rulership of Egypt for probably a little bit over 300 years. How did that happen? So last night, or early this morning, I went online and I looked up Greece, ancient Greece, and at a few times through the history of Greece, they become overpopulated. So when that happened, you had various Greek people that, just like people in different parts of Africa, different parts of the world, they went looking for places where they can set up colonies, and that's what they did. They set up colonies in places where it was more affordable to live and more affordable to trade. So the Ptolemy family, you know, it just starts, somebody just probably took, you know, everything starts with one. They came over here and discovered, wait a minute, you know, I can live over here cheaply. You know, they got exotic women here that you don't see in Greece and all this other stuff. And they went back and told others. So, you know, that's basically how colonization starts anywhere you look at it, even today in 2023. But to understand, to get a better understanding of Cleopatra, we had to go up her bloodline all the way to where it takes us back to Greece, when Greece was, like, you know, very populated. And, you know, Greece isn't that far of a boat ride to Egypt, because you got the Mediterranean right there. So, and like I said, we have absolutely no idea who her mother was. I mean, there might be some clues out there, but no, I mean, there, nobody said that, nobody has come up with a definite consensus on this was definitely Cleopatra, the seventh mother. But Cleopatra, she was the last pharaoh, but once again, that Cleopatra is a title. Now, what was she called? What name did they use in her day? I mean, because she spoke one of the languages, her native tongue, the first language that she spoke was Koine Greek, K-O-I-N, Greek. All right. And, it's there's a lot there, but I think to get a better picture of Cleopatra, you need to follow it. Why did they start migrating out of Greece? And this is like hundreds of years before Cleopatra was even born. So you take it back. So overpopulation, there's too many. It just didn't have enough, the way they were structured back then, enough land and supporting that many people. I think it was up to 2 million people at that time. So a lot of them just started, as man does, because we still do it. You know, I look for land in rural areas. Why? Because living in these large cities in the United States, you know, is, in my opinion, is just not sustainable. Not for my pocketbook. So I go look it out in the country. So for what you can rent a room for in, let's say, Los Angeles, California, you know, I can buy me a few acres of land. Matter of fact, you know what? Let's do that experiment today. I think because to get a Cleopatra here, the Greeks were leaving. So Reba, you still there, Reba?
Yes, I'm hearing you. My noise out. Yeah. I'm
How much would a room cost to rent on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago? Just, you know, a guesstimate.
A room.
You're just renting a room in somebody's house or condo on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago.
Well, honestly, I could see 500, maybe. Yeah, 500 average, yeah.
Right,
lowest that I've heard is 400 now, and I was like, wow, just for a room, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
The building I was in, the loans were 350, 400 on 79th Street, but I ended up taking over the whole apartment with a three bedroom.
Okay.
I got some just men there at first.
All right. So you say, all right, matter of fact, hold it. Let's go online real quick. Oh, man, what's... Okay, wait a minute. All right. Say room for rent. Lakeshore Drive. Chicago. Okay. Well, what pops up at the top of the page? Airbnb. Okay. So, rooms for rent, Lakeview, Chicago. All right. Let's take. And this is on rooms.com. Okay. So here's let's see. Lakeview, Chicago, Illinois. Unfurnished room on North Seminary Avenue. All right, on North Seminary Avenue in Chicago, Illinois. An unfurnished room and an apartment. This is one unfurnished room, a three bedroom, two bathroom shared home on Lakeview. And it's a flexible 1 to 18 month lease. The room is renting for, where's that price at? $950 a month. Here's another one for on North Seminar, Seminary, North Seminary. There's a room renting for $1,000 a month. Here's another room on North Lincoln, unfurnished room. $1,250 a month. Here's another one on North Lake Shore for $775 a month. Okay. Now, some people can afford to pay that. Others can't. So those that are open-minded to, you know, for that same $1,000, you know, for the, we had somebody on here last month, Angela Griffin. You know, she lives in Florida, but she bought like 11 acres of land in Indiana. Well, you know what? I'll give her a better example. This is striking distance of Chicago. She bought six houses in, six houses in Gary, Indiana for $3,600 a piece. All right. So, and there's a lot of people who live in Gary that work in Chicago. They go to work. I mean, they go to work in Chicago. They go to church in Chicago. But let's say they can't afford to rent in Chicago, so they go to Gary, Indiana, or other places. So, Angela, like I said, she bought six houses in Gary for $3,600. So let's go back. We're going up, but now we're looking at how did the Ptolemies even end up, how did Greeks ended up, you know, getting a toehold politically and, you know, in Egypt? Well, like I say, at various times in the ancient history of Greece, you know, they had a lot of people, and just like today, man, I can't afford to live here. So they went looking in other places. Somebody discovered, wait a minute, here's Egypt, and then just like today, on the internet, you know, we hear people, man, you can go to Brazil and live cheap. You can go to Panama, Colombia, Thailand, Ukraine, you name it. Or even here in the United States, you know, I know people that live in the DMV, where I come from, the D.C. area, that they're moving to Alabama, they're moving to Mississippi because it's less expensive. So somebody in the Greek Ptolemy family said, you know what, they're starting a colony here in Egypt. Let's move down there. And then they discovered, and then outsiders always can see the potential that the indigenous people can't even see. And once again, you can see it today on YouTube. There are Americans, there are African Americans that go over, that have gone over to the Gambia, to different parts of Africa, and they see opportunity. They don't have this here. They don't have that there. And a lot of these people, some of them start businesses and make it, some of them don't. But so I'm imagining the Ptolemies, they were part of a Greek colony, and they, you know, they learned the ropes, and they through commerce, and you know, that's my theory on how they got a toehold in Egypt. And like I say, they were there 300-some-odd years before Cleopatra the VII was born. And she was, like, say, the last pharaoh of that whole family dynasty, so to speak. But, yeah, I think to get a better idea of Cleopatra, you need to just go back to when Greeks, I mean, just where did Greeks travel around the Mediterranean? Egypt was one of the places where they started colonies. Wasn't the only place, but it was one of the places. Okay. Let's see. Let's go to the phone. So just like say today, you know, like Freedom Georgia, we had them on here, three black women that live in metro Atlanta, and they just traveled 2 hours outside of Atlanta, and they discovered a piece of land, and they got 19 families to say, look, let's pony up. Which they did. They bought 97 acres of land, and they're starting their own town. So I imagine the original Greek colony that, who knows, the Ptolemies had control of Egypt for 300 years. So we might have to go back 300 years before the Ptolemies even got any political power on, you know, when was the first Greek colony even set up in Egypt. So that might go back 1,000 years before that. I mean, well, at least 500 years before that. So anyway, people are still doing the same thing today. They're looking at, I can't. I mean, 250,000 people have moved out of Chicago in the last 10 years. Where did they go? More than likely, they're going to greener pastures. That's what man does. If it's not sustainable in one location, man goes hunting or looking for a more sustainable location somewhere else. And remember back then, you know, they don't have the government programs that they have today. You have to have a different skill set to live. But anyway, Reba, these prices for rooms, the lowest one I see is $675. $675 in my boat, that represents two mortgages.
That's right. Okay.
Which means I'm going to Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's or someplace. For $675, I'm buying me some building materials or using that money as a down payment to buy me some land or something.
That's off the lakefront and in the Hyde Park area more so, because in the other areas, even where I was living, the rents could go $400 to $500 for And so they may or may not include, like, the utilities.
Right.
And then, of course, when you're renting rooms like that, you have to agree on how the utilities are going to get paid. Either it's going to be a part of what's included in their rent amount.
Right.
And that's actually not a legal arrangement. It's not what they call it. That's really not what you call a legal arrangement. But, yeah, I went to a black real estate investors meeting, and they were talking about, like, how on the north side they are pricing, you know, blacks out, which they've been doing that for years. But that's actually, you know, illegal. They were charging more, way more than what they should have been charging for rent, too far above market value. There's a such, such thing as a fair market value. And then you figure out how to manage your business. But when you're selling product or services or space, which may be considered a product or service, you are actually obligated to consider the market rate value. Yeah.
In response to pricing blacks out, here's my response to that. I think, regardless of color, and I'm speaking for the United States, regardless of color, I think basically what people need to do, whatever you earn in a year, you need to figure out how you can earn that in a month. In other words, if you earn, let's say, $20,000 a year, and that doesn't go a long way in New York City or Washington, D.C. I don't know, but it sounds like it doesn't go a long way in Chicago. You need to think about how much, what do you need to do to earn $20,000 per month? That's across the board, black, white, or otherwise.
Well, when I say pricing ethnic group out of what happened is, outside of Section 8 and so forth like that, when the pricing out is slightly different than gentrification, because that's when you're basically getting them out as far as, you know, foreclosures and, you know, not able to get funding that should be accessible as a resource to stay in the community where they reside. Now, when it comes down to apartment units for renters, pricing them out, I was you could say like a victim of that. I was divorced and I stayed in my apartment and they kept upping the rent. So legally you can only increase the rent at that time. I don't know what it is now, but you can only increase it by so many dollars. It kept going up $15 a year. And I think last time was like a $20 increase. So I went from like $6.15 a month to like $6.45 a month, and it was. And then they were actually converting them into condos, so it was going up and up and up and up and up. Yep. So that's what I meant by pricing out.
I'll give an example of, and this is what I'm saying. People got, because immigrants are coming in here and balling out. The next door, and I've talked about this on the house. My next door neighbor, because I live in a semi-detached.
Oh, by the way, brother, I wasn't saying it for, you know, as a sob story, as that we don't have the resources.
Yeah, I understand.
Everything is at our fingertips, and it was just something that was discussed a few years back at this Black Investors, Real Estate Investors meeting, that what's happening on the north side, they were not allowing landlords on the south side and other areas in different income brackets to do the same thing.
Right.
They were allowed.
What I'm saying is people that are whatever income bracket that you're in, whatever, you need to start thinking about whatever you make in whatever you think is a good yearly income. All right. For instance, I got a friend of mine. She earns $100,000. She's got six figures a year. She earns a six-figure salary.
No, do you get what I was saying as far as the income bracket?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
No, so the residents in the community, anybody wanting to rent, they were actually pricing the people out. It's a little different than like gentrification. Well, it is different. So they were actually charging higher rent unless you were Section 8 and you were paying like $1,800
right.
a month for a one-bedroom.
Right.
So either you paid market rate or you had like Section 8 and things like that. So they were literally overcharging, you know, and that was just a couple of years ago. I really want to connect with their real estate investors and also invite some of those investors to this event on June 23rd so we can discuss this next level.
Right.
But yeah, I was kind of saying something a little different than like being unfair, because keep in mind, of course, you know, you just consider, but legally, you know, I look at the legal system as
right.
just a system which doesn't include us, just if.
Well, that's
ice.
What I'm saying.
Cold as ice.
That's what I'm
not,
saying.
Not us.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Regardless of income or race, have you seen the? It's on Netflix. It's a TV show called. Man, what's the name of it? Right on tip of my tongue. Shameless. Have you heard of this TV called Shameless?
No, but I did hear you mention it. But I think I get your
Shameless,
point about,
Shameless is Shameless takes place in Chicago. And Shameless, the story, it takes place in Chicago, modern day Chicago at that. It takes place in Chicago, and it's the central character is Frank Gallagher. All right.
Okay.
And he has a total of 7 kids, but the main focus is on 6 of them, 6 of the kids. And these are struggling white folks. And you look at Shameless and you can see the idea of white supremacy is a stone cold myth. There's some struggling ass white folks. But so what I'm saying is this. Regardless of color or whatever in the United States, just in my opinion, LA's opinion, that whatever you think about, whatever you think is a good yearly salary, you need to think, like, if you think 20 a year, 20,000, 30,000, 50,000, even $100,000 a year, because I know people who earn 6 figures that are renting rooms in the Washington, D.C. metro area, which is not the most, it's an expensive area, but it's not the most expensive area. Matter of fact, a friend of mine, I told her, she earned 6 figures, said, for your taste and the way you want to live and the neighborhoods that you want to live in, and we're not talking about high-end neighborhoods, but just middle-class neighborhoods, you need to be thinking about how you can earn 6 figures per month, because that's where the ball is going. Now, I'm going to leave, this ties into a lot of these immigrants that are coming in this country, that I keep on, you're going to hear a lot more success stories coming from them. My house, literally next door to me in D.C., sold for over $600,000 in 7 days. All cash, no loans, no help from the government at all. They're Asians that own a nail tech salon. I'm pretty sure they take in 6 figures a month. 6 figures a month, and they're just doing nails. They're nail technicians. That's what they do, and they're pumping that out of a black community. All right, so, and we're going to have a chat on that, if not this week, next week, on, you know, because a lot of these immigrant businesses, they're legally in here, they're setting up shop. And they're pumping millions out of the black, you know, why can't we do that? But that's a whole nother topic. So anyway, but like I said, we got to think about, you know, what, regardless of color, you know, due to inflation, just due to inflation and then the demands of local government, because local government is getting to be expensive to fix. The infrastructure, I mean, streets, you know, government employees are expensive, particularly if they're unionized government, you know, employees. So they're expensive. And then if you want to keep these social programs going on in cities, you know, that's expensive. So just regardless of color in this country, actually not even in this country, but globally, because this has happened globally, you know, whatever you earn, like monthly, you got to figure, in my opinion, you need to figure out a way to earn, if you're going to live in a highly urbanized, highly density environment. Now, if you go rural, you know, you might stave off the horses by a few years. But even if you go rural, I still believe that you need to figure out a way to whatever you earn yearly, see if you can earn that much. Now, you might not spend that much. You might not need that much. But my whole philosophy of life is it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it, particularly if you got sick. Because I know when my mother got sick before she passed, you want to see a six-figure bank account disappear if you get sick. And we're not talking about hospital sick. We're talking about stuck in the house in the bed sick. $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 is not a lot of money if one of your family members gets sick. So anyway, let's get back to hold it. Give me a moment here. Get the phone. So help. I mean, not my name. Get yourself a vendor team or something for the events that Reba was talking about. Hey, event, open phone lines, Cleopatra, anything you guys want to talk about. I'm just waiting for my phone to repopulate, then I'm going back to the phone lines here. And hold on, my phone's running slow, but it'll get there. And like I said, this is Airbnb week two. We're not going to go really in Airbnb today, but you can get some excellent ideas on what to do. All right, let's see. All right, 314 area code, your mic is open.
L.A., you still talking about Cleopatra?
I just went back to why did the Ptolemies end up in Egypt? How did they end up there? So that led me back to Greece and the population.
Ptolemy the first ended up there because of Alexander dying. Ptolemy the first went to the Melkite Coptics, and he wanted to be a god. Ptolemy the first, Suter. You know what Suter means?
Okay.
Suter is a title. It means savior. He wanted to be a god. And they made him a god. And that image of his god was called Seraphis. The image of Seraphis became the image of your Jesus Christ, who was a lifeless creature. That's why the male cops refuted him. But that's what the Ptolemy the first, when the Greeks occupied Egypt, he wanted to be a god like the gods that Egypt had, Osar, which the Greeks called Osiris, Aset, who the Greeks call Isis, and the sun, Heru, who the Greeks call Horus. That was a trinity.
Okay.
And
well, that's how it started with their bloodline.
Well, yeah, they did make Osiris, and later on with the council meetings, they came up and they made Jesus, the Christ. Christ is a title, too. And there was many
right.
Jesuses, a whole bunch of them. Every other male child was named that because of the meaning of the word. The meaning means what? The word means what? Savior.
Right.
And because of the tradition and myths that exist in those societies, they always turn to something unseen in order to help them out of the predicament that they was in. Cleopatra VII was Persian. She was not Greek. The Romans came in and ran the Greeks out. And you know that she was in Egypt because the crown she wears. She shows those two uraeus on her crown, which stand for the upper and lower regions of Egypt. The upper is in the south, the lower is in the north.
Okay.
So when she sat on the crown, the Persians. The Persians was in power. When
now
the Greeks
Persia
came in, the Egyptians.
Persia would be, now Persia in modern, in 2023, that would be Iran?
That's well, Iran.
Which one? Okay.
It's Iran. When the Greeks came in, they ran the Persians out. When the Romans came in, they ran the Greek out. They was happy to see the Greek come in because the Persian was real, real tough, real rough on. Then you had those five council meetings. It's where they created that what you know today is Jesus the Christ. The person never existed, technically. The walk on water and all this stuff. He existed in what was called the Apocrypha of the Bible. That's the New Testament. What do Apocrypha mean?
Okay.
Books of uncertain authorship. That's what it means. So now there's a bunch of events that went down to give you what you have today. You had your Council of Nicaea, the Council of Constantinople, the Council of Ephesus. That's what it created Mary. That's what it removed the Son out of the Trinity and replaced them. No, that's what it removed the Mother, Father, the Son, and all the. That's what it removed the Mother out of the Trinity and replaced it with the Holy Ghost. Council of Chalcedon, Council of Constantinople was the last. And they still going on today. In the Roman Catholic Church, by the way. So that's how this stuff going on. So, and you know, like people showing a black mermaid, there was no black mermaid in the mythology of the Greek and Onus. You know what they had, did have there on the land of Malta, the island of Malta, they had the Cyclops, the giant with the in the middle of the forehead. People call that the pineal gland. That was that giant's eye. He could see. And the story of giants is all over the place. You got them in Malta. You got them down in South America, in Bolivia, where you have these monoliths. You got monoliths like on Easter Island. You got them there in Malta. You got them in South America, these big, huge rocks, they say the giants was the ones that was carrying those, placing them where they go. And
okay.
That's throughout the world. Every place has got those stories. But, you know, the thing that people should be discussing is about what Congress is doing with this damn debt ceiling. It shouldn't have been, I don't think, it shouldn't have been a debt ceiling raise. It should have been a cut spending. The debt is over $31 trillion dollars, projected by another 4 years to be $42 trillion. The interest on the debt is like over $1 trillion. $1 trillion with a revenue of about $5 trillion, that's 20%. That's about 20% of your revenue. And that's unsustainable.
Now, where should that axe swing?
Pardon me? Oh, where should the axe
swing? Where should the axe swing?
All
because if I was swinging the axe, I would be cutting out a lot of social programs. That's me.
Well, yeah, you have to cut those out. All programs got to be cut. If they're going to come to an end anyway. Either you cut them, they're going to come to an end on their own because you can't sustain them. You don't have the revenue. One of the reasons you don't have the revenue, you don't have United States don't manufacture and produce like they used to.
Right.
Plus, you got a lot of AI, artificial intelligence, and non-human beings that's doing the work of human beings, and they're not paying payroll tax. Your payroll tax revenue is about $1.5 trillion. United States income comes from income tax. It comes from payroll tax. It comes from corporate tax, and it comes from tariffs. That's where it gets its revenue from. And when you're not manufacturing, your manufacturing jobs is down to like 13 million. Hell, that's like the state of New York. Mm-hmm. Back in 2000, manufacturing jobs was like 17 million people was manufacturing. But when people are being replaced with artificial intelligence, for one, and then replaced by machine language program robot, they don't pay any taxes. They don't pay any payroll taxes. I think they should pay. Charge a payroll tax to
their
robot.
That's true. A friend of mine who drives for Uber, he does the graveyard shift type of stuff. He said that sooner rather than later, because driverless cars exist right now. So that's one job that humans will probably be out of. And then at Walmart, if people go shopping at Walmart, they self-checkout is open. But sooner or later, you'll probably have Android there running off AI, artificial intelligence, checking you out. So what do they call this? The age of disruption.
You know what you owe on the national debt? You owe $95,000. If you're a taxpayer, you owe $248,000. I mean, that's how it works. The debt is divided amongst all the people in the country.
I agree with you. I think they should be swing that axe and swing it heavy instead of raising it. But...
When you raise it, you just increase what's called inflation. Go ahead and get your other call. I don't stick around.
All right, and inflation's out here running rapid. 773, your mic is open.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was enjoying listening to the conversation. I'm learning.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you're learning. If you wanted to add anything, just let us know. We'll get you up. Hold on a moment. We'll see.
I'm going to just tell you. I'm going to let y'all know, though, some of this stuff will come up in a lesson plan for some young people.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Well, I'm looking forward to when that gets down and right. We got somebody, I guess, calling in on 111, Skype or whatever. Your mic is open.
Okay, well, this is Mama Evelyn, so y'all know.
Oh, yeah, I recognize your voice.
Hey, okay. Greetings, sir. This is Brother Warren from New Orleans, host of New Orleans Wake Up.
Oh,
man, good to hear your voice. I haven't heard you in a while.
My folks from St. Bernard Parish.
Yeah. Well, look, I know your time ran out, but I just want to contribute two things. In Much of African folklore, such as the Igbo, they have mermaids, such as Mami Wata, which is a water spirit, and she's portrayed as a mermaid in Igbo culture. And throughout African mythology, you have images of mermaids as well. So I want to throw that point out there. On a debt ceiling, the war in Ukraine, the constant spending on the war in Ukraine, the preparation for a possible war against China in a couple of years maybe, all of this is draining the treasury. So if I had to slash, I would slash military spending. I would slash the undisclosed amount of money given to the CIA. But really what these people, both parties are controlled by the corporate capitalist class. They really want their Social Security and Medicare. That's really what they're working up to. So the debt ceiling drama, notice we have this drama, this back and forth, as if both parties one way or another is going to allow the debt ceiling. No, that's just a little game. That's to implement what is called austerity. And what austerity is, austerity means you basically make the taxpayers at the bottom pay for the cost, whereby the rich and the corporate elite get away with paying no taxes. And so this is nothing but a little theatrics that we see going on all the time. It's the ultimate cut on the entitlement programs that helped build a middle class that was created since FDR. That's what you're seeing, and allow the wealthy to go unscathed without paying taxes, and to allow the military to constantly get all of the money with no limitations, and that needs to be addressed. The war in Ukraine is a bust, and the attempt to contain Russia is not happening, and the fantasy of getting to China is nothing more but a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Warren, okay. Good to hear your voice.
And they're
still
not
on Blog Talk
already.
Wait, go. I didn't hear you, sir.
What was it? Wait a minute. What did you say, Mama? Evelyn?
They're not talking about the fact that they still owe Social Security over $12 million, and they have owed it since 1987.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Warren, you still have your Blog Talk show?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, I'm broadcasting heavily. Yeah, in fact, I'm going to have a show in a couple of hours. I'm going to have a show. Yeah. New Orleans,
okay,
Wake Up. That's my show.
Give us the time and the number for it. The name, the time,
okay,
and the number.
Okay, the show is called New Orleans Wake Up, and the number is, I never memorized this number, area code 516. Hold up just a second here. The number is area code 516-387-1933, and I'll be having a show at 1 o'clock Central Time, which would be 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So, but anyway, I just want to throw those points in.
What's today's topic? What's today's topic?
Today's topic is a continuation of analyzing black conservatives and how they are basically a comfort dogs. They are like emotional support dogs for white racist conservatives, and that's what the analysis is about there.
Woo, that's going to be a hot topic.
And
there.
In fact, the show is called Black Conservatives Are Holes. That is like the garden tube.
Hey, that's going to be you got a provocative title. I like that. So I encourage people to listen to him. He's got great content on that channel.
Have y'all heard anything about the African American party that they're trying to create?
No, I know nothing
not
about
that. Not me
this.
Personally. Maybe somebody else has. I don't know.
I don't know how to forward it to you on here because they sent it to me in a text, and they fixing to do an orientation on Monday, I think it is. And they're trying to create an all-black voting bloc. It's from young people. Well, I'm saying young people, but they in like their 40s, 50s.
What I would recommend to a lot of African Americans is the voting thing with the Republican and Democrat. We call that the duopoly. Those two parties are corporately controlled. I think it's best we just work on developing ourselves. Stuff like the host of this show does, buying real estate, developing communities. I think that's mm-hmm. what we need to go back to how we were doing it before they led us to register to vote. And that's kind of what we kind of was on that trajectory. And I think a lot of this electoral politics has taken us off course of self-development.
They got mad with me because I said we need to separate and take them back to, because you know they lost in world court. I think we need mm-hmm. to separate and take mm-hmm. them back to world court and reclaim my land and force them mm-hmm. out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, that's what I said.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the next caller real quick. Area code 410. Your mic is open.
Can you hear me, Brother L.A.?
Yes, sir. We can hear you loud and clear. Thanks for calling
in. I'm surprised that you didn't inform the people that Memorial Day was a holiday created by black slaves right after the Civil War. The
well,
original
well
Memorial
you know
Day
what?
Holiday.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that until you just mentioned it. So thank you for educating me at least
yeah.
on that.
Yeah, if you go on Wikipedia, they try to cloud it, but the thing is, it was the blacks in South Carolina that created the Memorial Day celebration, and what they did was to honor the Union soldiers that had fought in what they thought was their liberation, and they had a 10,000-person parade to honor their contribution to their fight to liberate the slaves. Now, the other thing I want to ask any of you that sit within the sound of my voice, who does the United States government owe? When they set a debt ceiling, who do they have to pay to clear up that debt? That's what I want to know. And the thing is, no conservative or no liberal will tell you that, but for all of the people that is very knowledgeable about this thing, who does the American United States government owe, and how much?
Well,
that's not my department.
Talking about as far as reparations?
No, that's a separate issue. Whenever you hear conservatives and liberals talk about paying the United States debt, who do they owe? And if they borrow some money, who do they owe, and how much interest is charged on how much they owe?
Well, that's a very good question. That's an excellent question. The reality is the United States prints the money, so it don't really have to pay back anybody, to be honest with you. It prints money, and that's why these other countries called the Global South are moving away from the United States to create their own alternative financial system so the U.S. can't sanction them. And China is dumping their T-bonds, United States T-bonds, right now. So that's a good question. Who does the United States owe? How do they pay them? In actuality, the United States really don't have to pay its debts because it prints the money.
But hasn't the
United States borrowed money from other countries?
Well, but here's the point. The U.S. dollar, L.A., has been like the global currency that's been used. So if the U.S. prints a dollar and you in another country and you using the dollar, I got power over you. You don't have power over me. See what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right. Now, look. I'm going to say this to Brother Warren.
When they
Brother
borrow
Warren
from the World
right.
Bank, they can't pay it back in U.S. dollars. They have to pay it back on what the dollar is built on. And I think ours was built on gold. But how
no,
much
they
gold
cut off from
it.
Gold
they
cut the gold standard. Nixon,
they
cut right.
the
gold
standard.
So,
but guess what?
But that's
Russia,
how they are supposed to pay it back in the world. That's the reason that there's a lot of countries then that are not accepting the U.S. dollars anymore.
Well, no, the reason why they're not, what they're trying to do is create an alternative financial trading system among themselves, because what the U.S. has been doing with the dollar has been weaponizing it, putting sanctions, draconian sanctions on various countries. And so what Russia, China, Iran, Brazil, Venezuela, which is just to name a few, South Africa, are working to create a different monetary exchange system.
Warren,
so
you're
when
talking
they exchange
about,
goods,
you're talking about BRICS, right?
BRICS
right.
Nations,
Brazil, Russia.
BRICS nations. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And what's happened
right.
is the U.S. is being isolated in the world economy, and basically there is no post-World War II economic boom that would occur in this country. All of the manufacturing base is basically in Asia because the American capitalist class shipped those jobs away in the 70s and the 80s because they won't pay American workers. And so now power, these
right.
other countries have power.
It's raining,
they have soft power. They can go around the world and invest, not instigate war like the U.S. is doing.
Right.
Yeah. That is deep.
Well, you know what? Warren is right. And the thing is, whenever you hear conservatives talking about they want to cut the debt, that's really an illusion that has been created. But now the thing is, I had a conversation with a white fellow one time, and he was talking about cutting the debt and everything else. And the thing is, they always talk about China had all of the debt in America and these foreign countries like Japan, et cetera. But the biggest debt they owe or they're responsible for is Social Security. They have robbed the Treasury of the Social Security, and they have to put that money back. As these baby boomers die, these new millennials come up. So they're in debt with the Social Security, and they have to replace that money back. Now, there's a website you can go on that go in and show you what the United States is obligated for. But it's not social programs. It's just like Warren says. You know, most of your money goes for military excursions that they've had and that they're trying to keep up around the world. That's where a lot of the money goes.
Yeah, yeah.
But the biggest thing is put that money back in the Social Security Treasury Fund.
The United States is a shrinking empire. It's trying to hold on to control of the world. It can't. It's losing its influence. It's losing its grip. So what's going to happen here at home? All these politicians like Ron DeSantis have to offer are culture wars. Woke, going after woke and leftism, and going in the libraries and taking books off, all of those kind of foolishness. That's all you're going to have from now on. Fascism, you're going to see a rise in what is called fascism because they can't compete. And let me tell you, China's economy surpassing the U.S. is going to be a death blow to their psychology as whites being a superior race. That's killing them right there. They're going to be going crazy. You're going to see a lot of this foolishness increase.
In fact, the elites in this country was trying to make the Chinese the reserve currency of the world, but China has refused to do so. Because,
China is fighting for independence from the United States. Russia is fighting for independence from the U.S. They don't want to be controlled by the U.S., and we enter what is called a multipolar world. It is a good thing for the world. No unipolar world where the U.S. is the only dog swinging its dick around the world hurting people. That is gone now.
That's true. That's true.
Well, China,
but
hands
you know
down, our manufacturers, they beat everybody. They're number one when it comes to manufacturing.
Oh,
no.
But here goes this, Ellie, this is very important. They don't allow the private sector in China to abuse the system. We done had 3 bank failures in the last 2 months, and the U.S. government, supposed to be separation from the government and private enterprise, right? The U.S. government trying to bail these rich white boys out. These rich white boys get a welfare check from the government to save their asses for what? Greedy and stupid business dealings that they know are going to be a bust. But China put them people in jail. They're... State involvement in the economy is producing wealth in the country, and the people have been lifted out of poverty, 800 million people since 1978, been lifted out of poverty. That is a tremendous contribution to world civilization. In one lifetime, China has gone from being one of the poorest nations in the world to one of the most highly technological economically advanced nations in the world in one lifetime. What nation doesn't want that?
That's true.
And the other thing is China's the most authoritative government on the planet. So you got to be careful about giving China praise, because the thing is, they are still an authoritative government. So with that being the case,
so what? Israel is an authoritative government. Look how they exterminate and killing the Palestinians over there. Okay, so why we pick on one country? Why we pick on one country to be concerned about their authoritarianism to ignore others? That's a fraudulent talking point that the right and the left, because the liberal Democrats are just as warmongering and racist as the right are. Oh, Elliot, I want to say one thing. I'll be 65 in July. I'll be 65, and I also did attend Bush. I also attended Bush private school like you did. I'm going to go look for the yearbooks. What year were you at Bush? Do you remember?
Man, I'm a year ahead of you. I went there in second grade. I went there for 1 year. I think, was my teacher Mrs. Ford? Man, but I was talking to my cousin over there. She said, that school's no longer open, she told me, though.
No.
They closed
down. What about Miss Fortner? You ever had Miss Fortner?
That could have been the woman I'm talking about.
Yeah, Miss Fortner.
I went there for second grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a black private school here in New Orleans for the listening audience. It was K through six or something like that?
It's something like that, because I know, you know, that kids, if you were interested in learning how to play an instrument, they had, you know, music lessons in the band and all that stuff there.
Yeah.
I also want to chime in to try and add to Warren's statement. The United States is an authoritarian government also.
Do you know there's a guy, Omali Yeshiteli? He's he's what you call a black leftist. Well, he's been indicted by the U.S. government, accusing him of collaborating with the Russians. See, this country does not tolerate dissent when it comes to Russia and China. You will get cracked, and that's. I did one show on China so far, but I'm also kind of concerned if I do more shows on China whether I'll be flagged, because the liberal Democrats are just as authoritarian as the right Republicans. And so this country has a hate for Russia, China, it has a hate for China, and we as black people have no business joining white people to condemn other people when none of those people did us anything. As Muhammad Ali said, ain't no Viet Cong call me no nigga.
That's true. But L.A., where's your boy in this conversation?
He's listening.
Tell him to speak up, damn it.
His mic is open. Everybody's mic is open.
The devil gets nervous. The truth is in the house.
I'm just listening at this mess.
You damn right you listen, because you ain't got nothing to say.
You don't even know what that is. I'm just listening. Go ahead. Keep talking.
Go ahead on. You got an opinion about everything else.
No, I said what I was going to say. You guys can keep talking.
All right, all right, we're going to wrap it up for today. Look, thanks for everybody calling. Tune in. Go ahead, Mama Evelyn. Go ahead.
Can I say?
Sure, yeah. That's big.
All right. Proclaiming our Youth Day is a celebration that I do every year, the last Saturday in July. And it is all about teaching our children to spend their money with their people and a positive way to make money. So I try to get as many black vendors as I can to donate that day. Instead of paying me to set up, they pay a black child from 7 to 13 to work with them they give $25 for the day. If the child is 14 to 20, they give them $50 for the day. But the goal is to, for them to see that who controls the job controls the community. So we need to create our own jobs and teach our children to spend their money with their people. And we always do it. We feed the children free all day long because we want them to get a relationship with their elders and the seniors, to know that money can rebuild the community. Because most of us don't know, if we could get every black person in the world to just one day out of the month contribute $1 to our economic base, every month we would have $350 billion to invest in our community, but I can't get enough black folks to work with me to organize.
How much you say you have?
I said if we could get every black person in the world to just donate $1 a month, we would have $350 billion a month to invest in our community worldwide.
You say every black person in the world contribute a dollar to invest in what community?
The black community, our community, whether it's in the United States, Africa, the islands. The thing is to rebuild our economic base before we got involved in their craziness, including slavery, to become self-sustaining again.
There you go, Beasley.
So it's just me trying to figure out how to get
that. Mom Evelyn, this is Mom Evelyn, this is year, what, 11, right? You've been doing it for 11 consecutive years, right?
This will be year 12.
Oh, all right, year 12. I was behind a year. Okay. 12 consecutive years she's been doing that.
Huh?
No, I was telling you, 12 consecutive years you've been doing it. All right, that's great.
Yes, after my grandsons, I lost three grandsons within 27 months. And it's I'm going to say this is only a rumor because I will not do what is necessary to prove what happened. But young people on the street said that the Chicago Police Department in a certain district that I helped gather information to send three groups of police to jail, that was their revenge, was three of my four grandsons that were murdered. So I do Reclaiming Our Youth Day in their honor. This, you know, trying to teach us we need to police our own community and not count on CPD. I don't know if Reba told you, but, you know, the response time for the police in the city of Chicago right now is 2 hours, and it don't matter what's going on.
Oh, no, I didn't know about that. I heard in Detroit,
yeah, well,
unless there's a homicide, the detectives don't even come out.
We got sound cameras that we paid $10 million for 12 years ago, but they have not solved one murder with those cameras. And those cameras are designed to turn toward the sound of the shot and follow any person they see running, send a text to dispatch to dispatch a car. It's supposed to be at that site within 10 minutes. So what that says to me is that Chicago and Chicago PD stole those millions of dollars that they paid for cameras that they know they was going. Oh, they worked at the Polisky shop. Then they'll solve that case. But just stuff that's happening in the community, and seeing the other thing people don't know, it's a city ordinance here. Every common area must be on camera. Hallways, parking lots must be on camera. So why aren't they solving any crimes in the city of Chicago?
That's a good question. We can do a whole podcast on that. Crime in any major city.
You think to see if you can find some folks older than me from Chicago who remember when they used to have the lynching parties here, that they would, people would come up missing every time they have a big celebration. And if you look at the stats in Chicago, every time they have a big celebration downtown, okay, the murder rate goes up. So that brings back to me what my dad and mom told me about the lynching parties where they would sign men with their throat cut, propped up against fire hydrants, people being lynched in parks, and it would always happen when they had some kind of big celebration going on downtown Chicago. And the murder rate still goes up every time they have some kind of celebration in the loop. So are they having shooting parties where they have been told when you come and shoot up a neighborhood, you got 9.5 minutes to get out that neighborhood? Because I talk to young people in the street. You know what they tell me?
Mama,
we are not stupid enough to walk into somebody else's territory, shoot it up, and expect to walk back out alive.
Could I share something, Ellie?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I want to pay honor and memory to my late aunt, Myrtle Baquet. My aunt Myrtle and her husband owned a very well-known Creole restaurant here in New Orleans. And in 1977, Bill Cosby actually went. It was in the neighborhood, an old place you walked into. Bill Cosby went into that place, and in 1977, he went on a Tonight Show. And he talked. It was called Eddie's, and he talked about Eddie's, and then that place even blew up more. And that was one of my mother's sisters, who was a very well known restaurant. In fact, the son has a restaurant. Eddie's no longer exists, but there's a restaurant called Lil Dizzy's. So if you ever come to New Orleans, visit Lil Dizzy's, and you try some Creole food here. That's one of the authentic restaurants I recommend people coming to when they come to New Orleans here.
Okay. All right. Well, I need to get back there. I haven't been there in a while. But,
There's
a whole lot I haven't explored down there. But, anyway, so listen, we're going to wrap it up for today because.
Hey, Brother LA.
Yeah.
Can I say something? Look,
sure. Go ahead.
I want to warn black folk this with this. John Henry Clark said black folk do not have any friends out here. So regardless of whether it's China in charge of the global economic system or anybody else, black folks are still going to be in danger. So the thing is, like the lady says, black folks got to concentrate on creating their own economic business center ecosystem in order to survive this thing, and we might have to just go in and figure out a way to defend ourselves. So now it doesn't matter. You don't have any friends out here, whether it's Chinese, India, Russia, or anybody else. We are out here all by ourselves, and we're the only ones that we can depend on.
But guess what? If I was a gambling man, I'd bet my money on the BRICS nations, and you can't find no African nation in here to state to distance themselves from Russia or China, because in their struggles against colonialism, Russia was there, at least at that time, the Soviet Union, and China was there too. You should go to some of the African countries and see the infrastructure that the Chinese have built, bridges, highways, big buildings, hospitals, whereby the United States would try to get them in debt to an IMF and World Bank loan.
I agree with that, but I'm telling you now, Brother Warren, if you're going to bet on any other race of people that has our interest at heart, you're going to lose. I'm telling you that right now.
It's not betting on another race of people. You have an alliances are being made among people. South Africa is a BRICS nation. That's a black nation. And you have other non-white nations seeking to join that alliance. So it's not so much looking for a race to save you in as much as people are working together against these enemies that have been keeping us down for so long.
Yeah.
You're going to lose. Yeah. You can be stuck in this fairy tale if you want to, but the only people that is going to look out for black folks' self-interest, they're going to have to align themselves with each other.
Tell the South Africans they lost when Cuba came in and helped them beat, Angola and South Africa, when Cuba came in and helped them beat the fascist apartheid South African leadership. Okay, so you have some tangible results from alliances out here.
I'm aware of that history, Brother Warren.
And
I'm
who is
just
that?
Telling
who is
you
the
now,
young
cannot,
lady from the Black Panther Party that they protected?
And many other Black Panthers. And Cuba would not turn over. Cuba would not turn over those Black Panthers back to the United States. Asada Shakur, there's a $2 million reward out for her name. And people won't turn it back over.
I understand that. I'm just telling you now, you can have alliances, but you better have an alliance where you have your best self-interest at heart. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I agree.
I agree with you.
That's
what
I'm talking about.
Booker T. Washington, we got to all start right at home. That's where we got to start at home. Yeah.
I agree. You got to have a plan for yourself. Absolutely.
Exactly. Right. Got to have a plan for yourself first.
Y'all know more than me about putting information out here. But I do know how to check stuff. So that stuff that they send me about that African-American voting block, I'm going to send it to, because this is a line I can send a text to, right?
Right. No. Send it to, you know what, I got your number. You got my number already. It's the same number.
Okay.
But,
so I'm going to send the information to you. Because he's right. We got to start organizing ourselves here.
That's right.
Okay, Mommy.
All right.
Okay. Hey, you know what? Hold on.
Nothing you can't do as long as you believe
in
you.
I'm going to end it for today. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. And listen to the Warren Show.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right.